It's the third hour of the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. Donald with you on till 12 midday. The carers were told they would get a contributory stamp a few years ago. This was promised by Leo Varadkar when it was announced they would get the €1,000 bonus. Nothing's been done since. The stamp hasn't materialised. No mention of it now either. Carers saved the state an estimated €20 billion per year, so says a caller. Right. The DL debate tonight will be having much discussion, and I'm sure a lot of discussion about what's been happening behind the scenes in Donegal GAA, as well as what's been happening on the pitch. The main headline that's happened on the pitch in the past number of days, unfortunately, is that Donegal has, let's be honest, as expected, been relegated to Division 2 of the National League. We're joined on the line by Brendan Devenny, the presenter of the DL debate. Brendan, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Donald.
Brendan, it's going to be a compelling listen tonight, but maybe not the conversation we wanted to be having.
Yes, well, first of all, Don, Oisin's sitting in for me tonight. I'm taking my wee nephew, Ethan, up to Ireland and France. So I did a wee a sit-in for Oisin yesterday. My first ever commentary, Don, not the greatest game to do it on, but anyway, I helped Oisin out yesterday, so he's going to sit in. But I have interviews in that lined up for them with the likes of Paddy McBurdy, our captain, and with Aidan O'Rourke. And we also, I also got a long interview with Peter Campbell of the Democrats, just to sum up the mood in Donegal at the minute, and the management, and where we go from here. And Arsenal, a few other interviews this evening across all the action of the weekend.
Now, fair play to Paddy McBurdy, actually. He's come out very strongly over the past 24 hours saying, look, we're not where we want to be, but we're united as a team. We're working together as a team. We stand proud as a team, and we go forward as a team. He's very much saying, look, I mean, you know, whatever else may be going on around the place, the team is committed and the team is united.
Yeah, and listen, I suppose Paddy maybe picked me up on the question, and you'll hear it later, Don, when I said to him about being together, and he says that group of players is together. It wasn't the dressing room that I'm talking about being together, Don. It meant tactically on the pitch and as a formation and as a team. Listen, every team now, Don, plays with a counter-attacking system. They drop players back. They play, you try and take your man-to-man, but then you protect the space, and then you break forward, and more than that, you defend as an entire team, and you move forward as an entire team. There was neither of that happening last week or this week, Don, and that's what I'm afraid. And listen, Patrick's captain, a massive respect for the man. I hated even asking him those types of questions yesterday. But leading into Down, Don, at the minute, you know, if we had one area of our pitch correct, or if we had something to work on, but at the minute, you know, everything is an issue with us. I mean, we were hammered again yesterday, 21-9. We were hammered last week. And there's been a couple of halves throughout the league where we did play a bit of football, but it's just as we go down to the end of it. Now, I know we had injuries and people missing and people pulled out in that yesterday, and it was people making debuts, and there was a lot of new players there, though. But you just think of the Down people must be sitting looking at those last two performances saying this is a brilliant time to play Donegal.
But then again, as you say, it's down in the opening round of the Championship. That's just a few short weeks away at this stage. Now, obviously, it's not the preparation Donegal wanted, but it's the preparation Donegal has had. I mean, do you see any chance that Donegal can regroup, reunite and go into that down game with at least more confidence than they may have had in the past couple of weeks, and with more drive and with more spirit, that maybe we can look and say a lot of people are going to think that down game is now a foregone conclusion? Perhaps it isn't.
Certainly it isn't, Don. Listen, bro, I'm a Donegal fan. Obviously, I play for them and I support them, and I know what the lads go through. And I'm wild positive, Don. I'm wild. You've probably heard of me over the years criticising negative football and wanting players to express themselves and go and attack and open up and play. And I'm savage pride for Donegal. But listen, I have to be realistic as well as someone that goes and analyses games. Dylan, if we sail into the Championship, I guess, we'll be hammered. Down will beat us for a start. And if we go into the group stages playing like we do now, we'll be absolutely annihilated. I mean, Roscommon rang changes yesterday. They were playing in second gear, really, and they toyed with us, you know. So how we pull that together, Dylan, this is one of the biggest jobs I've ever seen. Now, don't get me wrong, Dylan. We went bad at times in Donegal, and there was bad performances in games, but there was always enough kind of players, and they thought if we get the right management, we get our act together again, we can compete. Like, at the minute, we're not competing at all. And whether the management even stay on now is questionable. I mean, Paddy Carr stepped away, and Aidan took over as the manager. And I know there's only like a matter of days in between times. But he said himself he wasn't going to stay on unless he got a reaction. Well, he definitely didn't get that reaction yesterday, Donal, because that was one of the worst I've ever seen Donegal. So whether he stays in charge or not is still a big question mark. I know Fergus McGee is talking to him. You know, so what happens to Donegal now getting into the championship is still, there's questions everywhere, Donal. And that's outside of all the other turmoil. So I hate bringing all this up, Donal, but just at the minute, I'm talking to people, I'm looking for something to grab a hold of, to build into the championship. And listen, I'm glad our captain's come out and has been bullish. I mean, he's an absolute star and a hero to so many, Patrick McBurney. I mean, if we could get him fit, that would be a huge starting point. But, you know, he had a real bad injury here.
There is no doubt that 2023 is going to be a watershed for GAA in Donegal, in the same sense that there was a watershed when Jim McGuinness took over, and it became quite clear when Jim McGuinness took over that he was looking for a new direction, and he said to the team, if you come with me, I will take you places you can only dream of up to now. Is there a thing, can we make this into a positive in that, okay, Donegal is down at the moment, but you've got your Patrick McBurney there, you've got that spirit there, you've got people there who want to play for the jersey, you've still got that huge pride in Donegal, that huge pride in Donegal GAA, that if we can get the right management team in and the right vision for the coming months, okay, maybe 2023 is the year we put down as the educational one, it's the year that we don't have the success, but hey, better things can happen in 24.
Listen, I totally agree, Donal, and I always would look to that side of things. It's just if you look now to the immediate time, because we're not sure who's going to be in charge, and because our last, particularly, I mean, we're relegated on 3 points, Donal, because our last couple of performances was so inept, you're kind of looking to say, right, where are we going or what's happening? And in many ways, when you throw back to last year, we were in Ulster final last year, we very easily could have won an Ulster championship. So people think of what has happened now, and it's been a catalogue of things that have led to it. Then, of course, we had the academy in the background. But, you know, Declan Bonner was singled out. You mentioned previous managers here, you know, for serious stinging abuse last year. I'm sure Declan Bonner sitting back thinking, now look at the job that I was doing. Like, people have got to be careful, and I think people are overcritical at times. But at the minute, though, you're right, we're at a low ebb, and it's also affecting now, say, some of the finances is coming in and out, because a lot of our backers put money in the team, but they got to see the right things happening. So there's a whole, I suppose, knock-on effect to the team at the minute. Now, I do feel sorry for the players that are caught up in the middle of this, but certainly, though, we need something now. We need someone experienced to come in to set up. We need to try and beat down somewhere about the 11-10, 12-10 mark, and people will be saying, that's blanket defence. But though, until we get our defence right, every team's building defence first. We've got to get our defence right and then counter-attack. That's basically what everybody's doing. But neither side of our team are doing that tactically. So that's the first job. And there's a talk of a training camp costing big money and Johnson housing us. You know, I'd say we have a centre of excellence over there. Let's stay in a Donegal hotel. Let's cut out that expense. Let's get the basics right on the pitch first. Let's get these players back tuned in to Donegal, because I felt that bad for them yesterday. And even when we were on the attack, particularly in the second half, guys at the ball, and they're kind of looking around each other and that. So it's almost as if we need to start from scratch again, go back to the complete basics of football, and let's build this team up and end the championship.
Brendan, the DL debate tonight, as you said, Oisín presenting, standing in for yourself. You're heading down to Ireland, France, and hopefully you have a good night down there tonight, and I hope yourself and your nephew will enjoy it. We'll be listening, obviously.
There might be more blanket defence. Well, Ireland tonight.
Well,
Mbappe would take about Mbappe would be a good corner forward, let me tell you.
Well, he would. I'll tell you something, though. If they can keep Mbappe quiet, they'll be doing a good job tonight.
They will indeed.
No doubt about it. Brendan, a pleasure of always. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, sir. Take care.
That's Brendan. Brendan and his guests. Well, Brendan will be speaking to Aidan O'Rourke, to Patrick McBurney, to Peter Campbell. That segment pre-recorded. It'll be Oisín that will be presenting DL Debate tonight. And it's in association, of course, with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's in Letterkenny. Always compelling listening, the DL Debate. Now, let's take a couple of your comments. Caller says, I was given a credit note from a business. I have it about 8 months. I went back to the business recently and asked when I could get a refund, as the service isn't available. They can't give me a timeline for the service to be reinstated. I got nowhere. This week I decided to use the credit note for another service that business provides, only to be told the note is out of date, but there is no date marked on my note. My understanding is that a credit note is valid for 2 years and a voucher for 5. Does this business have a legal obligation to stand over my credit note? My uneducated and unlawyerly view would be absolutely yes, but take advice on that, possibly the Consumers Association, maybe somewhere to go for advice on that caller, but certainly it seems to me that, and I'm told by Carolyn, we indeed have passed that question on to them ourselves as well. Just want to give you a mention to the fact that the well-known England-based Donegal man Brendan Tiny Vaughan will be bringing his tractor raffle to Creasla on Good Friday, April 7th. Brendan's come up with a novel idea to raise funds to assist with the funding for the emergency services who assisted during the Creasla tragedy. He's known to many for his wonderful photography of the Donegal and Irish community, both here and indeed across the water in London as well. He's sourced a Massey Ferguson 135. He plans to raffle it in the coming months, hopefully raising quite a lot of money. Tickets will be priced at €10 or indeed £10 sterling, and he hopes to bring the tractor to various locations in Donegal and London, and he'll be in Creasla with it at midday on Good Friday. And always great to see good work like that being done, and people like Brendan Vaughan are doing good work like that all of the time. 16 minutes past 11 o'clock. Earlier we spoke about the road at Mill Road in Ballybuffet and the potholes and so on, and a long discussion with that in during which we had a contribution from a councillor, Patrick McGowan, who chairs the Lifford Stranorder Municipal District. Joined on the line by Joe, who wants to make a comment. Joe, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal.
Yeah, you know that road, you believe, and you believe there are issues which have contributed to the state it's in at the moment.
Exactly, Donal. I mean, that road has been in a quite a vulnerable state for years and years, but and it occasionally you do get potholes in it, but around last autumn time, they cut down all the broadleaf trees that were lining that road, and since then it's been it's been a step change. You know, it's unbelievably worse, and it's been bad now since Christmas. They fill it in occasionally with some loose gravel, and it's washed away within 24 hours.
Now, I know Councillor McGowan did say that the hope is that they'll be able to do a more permanent filling in of the potholes, actually using proper tar and proper surfacing, and that should be longer lasting. But your belief is that getting rid of those trees, that they were effectively sheltering the area from the frost, and now that they are gone, the area is now wide open to the elements, and that's having an impact.
Yeah, I mean, you can see this right around the county. Trees that are along the roads all over the county are getting cut down, and you know, it's very hard to predict what the effects of that will be sometimes. And I mean, it's clear to me that the state of this road is not like it has been any other winter. It is vastly different. There's no comparison. I mean, it does get potholes, and they do fill them in. And usually it could last, maybe 3, 4, 5 weeks. But now it's not lasting at all. Yeah. And it's never gotten this bad before. And it's a complete step change. And that's a very visible difference between this year and previous years.
We have been given that commitment, as Councillor McGowan outlined, from Donegal County Council, that the road is now on its roads programme, that it will be doing a more permanent job on that road to address those potholes. That we've had a situation up to now, as you've pointed out, where it's been basically a patch-up job here and there, but those patch-up jobs don't work. So a more permanent job, hopefully, will lead to a more permanent improved surface on the road. Are you happy with that commitment? Yeah.
But, I mean, if they can improve the roads, great. But there doesn't seem to be any thought to the consequences of what they're doing when they cut down these trees along the roads.
Yeah, Joe, a point well made. Thank you very much indeed for making it. That's Joe there, on that Mill Road there in Ballybuffet. Joe, thank you. And we will be waiting to see what happens there. Hopefully we'll get some proper improvement on that particular stretch. I want to mention there's an Autism Awareness Coffee Morning taking place at the Autism Family Support Centre. It's on Convent Road, Letterkenny in Donegal, 1A Convent Road. It's on Sunday, the 2nd of April, from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. So 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. on this coming Sunday, April 2nd, the Autism Family Support Group inviting you to a coffee morning to celebrate and raise awareness of autism on World Autism Day 2023. We've got a message from a family, and it's one which it's a difficult read, but it's an important one. I just want to share this with you. Our teenager was always full of happiness, competence and confidence, was part of a group of friends when a couple of ringleaders started being mean in a very passive and sly way, so others didn't see what they were doing. As a result, our teenager became totally isolated. Our happy child has become withdrawn, does not want to leave their room, is extremely upset all the time. Anxiety has become a huge issue. We as parents have no idea how to support our child, and our child has refused to go for any counselling. And that's a call that has come in to us from someone who is very concerned, and understandably so. Is there any advice you can offer? Is there any perspective you can give on this? Child was happy and outgoing. A so-called friend has begun to act in a mean and passive way. The child, as a result, has become withdrawn and at the moment is refusing to do any counselling sessions. If you have any perspective on that, by all means, please do get in touch. Now, I'm going to change the direction completely and talk about mink. We know that there were some mink farms in the county, and legislation has been brought into place to close those farms down and stop farming mink for fur. One of the problems over the years has been, we understand, a number of mink have escaped from those farms and are in the wild. John joins us on the line. John, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
John, it's our pleasure, John. It's an important issue. You have been having issues with ducks and chickens, and you believe problems you're having are linked with mink.
Yeah, like that there. Now, it was one of them things there that I put a lot of thought and everything into over the last couple of years, and all we wanted to have was, you know, a couple of chickens and ducks and everything. We'd done the fencing to the highest standard that we could possibly do and everything like that there, even including building a shed and everything to lock them up at night and everything. And then, of course, Friday night, Saturday morning, we went out and we were cleaned out all the chickens. And, I mean, if it was a fox or something like that there, from my, what I believe is that they take one or kill one, but this was just a slaughter. You know, it's hard to deal with, you know.
And are you based near where one of those mink farms would have been located?
I'm actually between Anagar, Lochinvar, and Ranapast area.
And
like as I said, in that there wasn't a thing that was thought of overnight. There was a lot of planning put into place and a lot of fencing put up, like and everything and. You think you lock them up at night and everything, you think to yourself, you know, you're watching them during the day and, you know, you're doing all that you can, you know, and the next thing you get wiped out in the night, it's not great. Like, it's heartbreaking.
I'm sure you've been speaking with friends and neighbours in the area.
Yes,
have other people been having issues as well?
That's right. Yes, they have, yes. Like, some of the stories there, like, it's horrendous, like, and you know, I was, that's the reason I rang today, you know, like, because we thought a lot about it in that day, and we don't know where to go from there, like, and we weren't selling eggs or anything like that, they would be giving them to neighbours and everything. It was a pastime, you know, and like, it's one of them things there, like, everybody, you know, nowadays, it's a nice thing to think that you can rear them, you know, and I mean, to be wiped out overnight like that there, you think to yourself, see, like, what can you do? What's the other precautions can you do? Or is the council there like, yeah. Are they putting up things there that you can actually trap them, or what happens to them afterwards? But definitely, like, say, with the devastation that was done, it wasn't a fox. Like, it had to be the mink, and, you know.
I mean, are there mink wild in the area, do you believe? And have we had issues like this before?
I do believe they are. Yeah. Because I do believe, and from talking to different ones now since that, a lot of people have spotted them personally and everything, and even the likes of Gold Island, I believe, that they were spotted and everything, you know. And it was a thing that I didn't know too much about, like, till I heard about, you know, years back or whatever, amount of years back, that they had been once in the area, and, like, what's been done about them? Are they still out there? And I'm just trying to put it out there to listeners. Mm. Maybe some of the listeners out there would have had the same problem, or I'm not sure.
Sometimes the problem can be identifying actually who has responsibility for this. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. Maybe National Parks and Wildlife would have some role to play. Now, I'm not sure if their role extends, say, beyond Glenveagh National Park or government lands, but I'm not sure if they would have and the other thing, of course, is that mink is not technically, mink is not a wild animal. That we understand there are some in the wild because they've escaped from farms over the years.
Yeah.
But it's a very interesting one. And John, hopefully you'll get some resolution to this. But listen, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Not at all.
And we wish you well. Are you going to replace them and start again?
Well, that's the thing. We don't know because it makes too much time and effort.
Of course,
you know, and then you think to yourself, what do you do next? You know, and it's heartbreaking. And when you have an empty yard, like, and just because of one of them, like, it's, you know, it's crazy, you know.
Well, John, whatever you decide, we wish you well. And hopefully if you do get back into raising chickens and ducks, you'll have better luck in the future.
But
certainly we'll be keeping a close eye on that one. That's John there in West Donegal, and he believes that the slaughter of his chickens and ducks was down to mink. Caller comments and says, the end of the eviction ban has lots of landlords rubbing their hands with glee. Good tenants have already received their month's notice to quit by the end of April. A house that currently demands 500 to 600 euro a month can be quadrupled renting it to Ukrainians. 35 euro per person tonight per night is the going rate. That means a house with only two Ukrainians can get 490 euro per week, 2,100 per month. Don't blame the poor Ukrainians. They do need somewhere to live. Long-term good renters should be protected. I have good neighbours that this is happening to. I'm so angry at what this government is doing. And the caller adds, I myself do fundraise and volunteer to help Ukrainian refugees, which is a fair point, and certainly the point's taken on board. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll have our monthly focus, and this week we're going to be speaking about addiction to over-the-counter medicines. Time for our Monday Focus. Today we're speaking about addiction to over-the-counter medicines. Delighted to say that we're joined on Zoom by Professor Colin O'Gara. He's the head of addiction services at the St John of God Hospital and clinical professor of psychiatry at UCD. Dr. O'Gara, a very good morning to you.
Good morning. Just struggling to hear you a tiny bit there, Donald.
Okay, I'm about as loud as I can go on this end without, in fact, deafening the listeners through their speakers. So if you can just make out what I'm saying, I'm afraid I can't really go any louder than this because I have, obviously, I have to keep an eye on the levels that go out on air.
Sure.
Yeah. Colin, how big an issue is addiction to over-the-counter medicines?
Addiction to the over-the-counter medications, Donal, has been substantial. I mean, if you look at 2012, there were restrictions put on the sale of these medicines. So, you know, going back as far as there was a significant issue. I think in recent times, you know, codeine has remained a significant problem. That would be the likes of Nurofen Plus and Solpadeine. And, you know, usually these medications are thought to be mild opioids. But when you're taking them in significant amounts, it can be quite harmful.
You also tell that you were contacted by someone recently who said they had a friend that bought a mix of medicines that they could buy perfectly legally in a pharmacy, but they could mix them in such a way as to get high.
Yeah, I mean, the over-the-counter medicines are a concern in terms of the abuse potential. You know, but I would say as well, Donal, I mean, the amounts of medication out there in terms of the internet and other opioids, much stronger opioids like painkillers and fentanyl. Fentanyl is a drug that is many times stronger than heroin and has a very strong risk of overdose. So the opioids are a big concern because they are linked with heroin, and the big concern with opioids is overdose, you know?
Yeah. Now, obviously, if you're in extreme pain, you may at times, under strict supervision, usually in a hospital, gain access to the stronger drugs. And I have myself, on one occasion, actually had in the UK what I believe would a drug called dimorphine, which was very, very strong indeed. Now, I had it once and it was very effective. The worry is if someone decides, oh, I've got a headache, you know what I really need is I really need that really strong drug that I had that time in the hospital. And that's maybe when we start going down the slippery slope. These drugs are very potentially important and beneficial to us, but under very strict and very, very regulated and specific circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. And regulated is the correct term, you know. I mean, these, you know, over-the-counter medicines are available to a lot of people, and they should be available, in my view, to a lot of people without restriction. If you have to go to an overburdened GP service to get access to, you know, the likes of over-the-counter codeine medicines, I think that would be a backward step. You know, I think we do need to look at, you know, if people are taking over-the-counter codeine medications in an abusive way, we need to look at how to support people in those situations. There is no doubt that, you know, the you know, this strikes probably on drug policy all the way up. You mentioned dimorphine, which is interesting because in the days of when I was working in London over 20 years ago, there was a doctor called John Strang, who I worked with, and he was probably one of the pioneers of injecting clinics. And what you give to people in injecting clinics is actually dimorphine. So that's the controversial practice of allowing people to inject in certain circumstances, supervised medically, of course. And what it does is it gives people, or it lends an opportunity to engage people in treatment, get them off the street, and reduce acquisitive crime, like muggings and break-ins, and you know, the type of crime that goes with drug use. So, although the over-the-counter, we may not link up over-the-counter addiction with that other type of addiction, it is all linked.
And part of the problem sometimes can be people start on a pathway of, particularly if someone maybe gets regular headaches or gets regular aches and pains, that they realise at some point that taking an ibuprofen or a codeine medicine that they've got in the pharmacy, that that has worked. And sometimes in their heads they go, oh, well, I took one dose and it worked really well. So if I take two doses, it might work twice as well. And that's where we can sometimes start that slippery slope of making the presumption that I'm in pain. As long as I take more and more and more of the drug, that pain's going to go away. But two things are going to potentially happen. Number one, we're going to build up some form of resistance. So it's not going to be as effective the 10th time as it was the first time. But as well as that, we're actually going down the road of, particularly, I know if you take ibuprofen over a prolonged period, you can leave yourself open to stomach ailments and other side effects that can be very problematic.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned a few things there. I mean, one is the route into taking over-the-counter pills. One is alcohol. So alcohol nearly always comes into the picture in terms of what I call a gateway drug. So, you know, alcohol is a very harmful drug, and it does lead, say, for instance, very practically with hangover. So a lot of the patients we see are taking 4 to 6, you know, Nurofen or Solpadeine a day, And that can build up. And sorry, the reason for that is hangover. So it can very much build up from there. The phenomenon that you're describing is called tolerance. So you do develop tolerance over time, and you need to take more of the drug to have the same desired effect. And it goes on from there. So again, you know, it's really, you know, it's about education. It's about knowing that these pills are dangerous. You mentioned ibuprofen. A lot of people don't really know that the other piece of these coding medications, they're non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. They're very toxic on the stomach and the small bowel in particular. And one of the routes of referral that we would have would be from gastroenterology clinics where there's been a perforation of the bowel, you know. So, you know, the message is that for a lot of people, these drugs can be useful when they're used properly. They shouldn't be used more than 3 days, is what a pharmacist will say. If it's used properly, Donal, in those situations, there's no issue. But it's when they're used, you know, for an extended period of time, you know, I would caution, you know, for your listeners, just be aware of that. The other thing, just be aware of some of the more stronger medications. So something like Salpadol would have 30 milligrams of codeine, and where Salpadine would be in around 12. So, you know, and Salpadol could be prescribed multiple times over a day if you had an injury or if you're post-surgery, you know. So just to be aware that codeine is highly addictive, and it can be very problematic, you know.
You have indicated that you're not necessarily in favour of increasing the number of drugs that actually require a doctor's prescription. Now, we know, for instance, on this side of the border, a number of drugs, particularly those that will contain codeine and ibuprofen, drugs like Nurofen and the other generic sort of equivalents are only available in pharmacies. One of the realities in an area like Donegal, of course, is we can drive 20 minutes down the road across the border and easily buy generic boxes of those drugs for less than a pound in a local supermarket. But you don't believe that restricting, making them prescription only is necessarily the answer?
No, I don't, because I think what you're doing is you're restricting appropriate use of that drug to probably 80% of the population. And I think it's also preventing us doing what we should really do, which is start to get to the roots of why people use drugs in this matter, you know. And people who use drugs in this matter need to be supported. They shouldn't be criminalized. They shouldn't, you know, we're really just going down the wrong road entirely, in my view, taking that approach. And it, you know, you can extend that across to other drugs as well, really. People who suffer from addiction are ill. They're ill with a medical disorder, and they deserve to be helped, in my view.
And I'm sure the last thing doctors need is more pressure having to prescribe painkillers for people that are going to start flooding their surgeries because they have a headache or because they have a toothache. I mean, that's the last thing doctors need, is to have more pressure piled on top of already, for many of them, intolerably busy surgeries.
Yeah, I mean, that's a brilliant point. And what I just add on to it is that it's just not feasible, because there's, you know, the GPs are absolutely, you know, at the limit, if not over the limit at the moment. And to suggest that they're they would be absolutely inundated. So it's just an absolute non-runner, that is, you know.
The advice that's given is always read the label, and maybe sometimes we don't always listen to that advice, and it's a bit like just whenever you hear an ad for a bank, there is regulated by the Financial Services Authority, and that just washes over us. And sometimes, take this drug, always read the label. Sometimes that always read the label just washes over us as well. Your advice to people would be, do you know what? Read the label.
Yeah, absolutely. But I suppose in the absence of smart education campaigns. I mean, when was the last time we heard a smart, you know, a national campaign around particular drugs? We haven't, you see. So, I mean, if we had those and people were aware, and, you know, that could be started at, you know, at secondary school level and up, so that people do know what's out there, they know the dangers associated with it. But again, you know, you need funding to do that. And really, there's so many worthy medical causes out there. Addiction tends to come down the pecking order, Donal, you know?
Yeah. Now, I have one question. I'll put it to you. I'm not sure this is within your remit in bailiwick, so if it isn't, we'll absolutely understand. A caller is asking, is it safe to take Salpadine while you're on blood thinners?
Well, look, I mean, I would say you have to answer that question in the context of your medical condition, and really it's one for the doctor, the particular practitioner, to answer, because it's probably, there could be many other factors in it, Donald. So yeah. I wouldn't answer that straight off without seeing the whole situation.
Yeah. In terms of finish up after this, but in terms of the ongoing debate about the taking, how much of it is based, do you believe, on the fact that people just don't have the information, that people don't perhaps know that long term use of codeine or ibuprofen or whatever can have those effects, can be addicted, that people aren't willingly going down this road out of any sort of sense of badness or anything? They're going down that road out of a sense of not knowing the potential consequences.
I think it's huge. I think that part of it is, how are you going to know what a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory is? How are you going to know that that's actually within these pills? And how are you going to know that? I mean, you need to, like, in my view, the only place you learn a lot of that is in medical school, you know? Yeah. I mean, yeah, you could, you know, it's the information is there technically if you go looking for it on the internet, but like you're not necessarily. And again, it comes down to pharmacists. I mean, it's not reasonable to expect pharmacists to be policing, chasing, identifying potential, people who are, people who have problems. Definitely the obvious cases, if people are shopping around and the pharmacist has a high level of suspicion, that's fine. But there's a whole cohort of people there who are probably on the borders, and it's more subtle. And I think it's completely unreasonable to expect pharmacists to do the whole thing, police and monitor and the whole lot. It's completely unreasonable, you know.
Certainly a very important issue to be discussing. And Professor Colin O'Gara, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you, Donal. And I'm glad I managed to hear you just about. Sorry about the
Excellent.
Picture, but I had the phone practically up to my ear.
The picture was absolutely fine. I fully appreciate that. Colin, thank you.
Thanks a million, Donal.
It's been great speaking to you. That's, as we said, Professor Colin O'Gara there. He is the head of addiction services at the St. John of God Hospital. And he's clinical professor of psychiatry at UCD. Very important issues being discussed there. And I suppose it does bring it through to us that maybe the important thing is, particularly if taking a drug for the first time, even though it's over-the-counter, always read the label, because some of the information that's on that label can be very, very important indeed. And it's an issue that does. Someone did say, I had dimorphine when I was in London. I will absolutely stress, I was given it when an inpatient in a hospital after surgery. I was given it by a nurse on the prescription of a doctor, and it was not under any other circumstance, and I haven't had it since. Someone else asked, did it work? Yes, it did. Absolutely it did. Caller says, can you ask your listeners, are any of them still waiting to receive the €1,000 pandemic payment? I work for a nurse on call. I'm a healthcare assistant. I've been there for 5 years. I worked 12-hour shifts at Letterkenny University Hospital at the height of the pandemic in full PPE for 12 hours, direct contact with COVID-positive patients. And while most other agencies have paid out the payment due to their workers, we've been told yet again it's not available for us yet. It is so unfair. It's a very important issue. So if anybody else out there is still waiting for that promised pandemic payment, we would love to hear from you. Another letter we've had via email. I'm contacting Highland Radio in relation to my recent hospitalisation in Letterkenny Hospital for quite major surgery. I'm covered fully by my private health insurance for both private professional medical care and hospital stay. I attended the morning my surgery was scheduled and was channeled directly to surgery. 5 hours post-surgery, I was transferred to a 6-bed hospital ward. The following morning, a person from the accounts payment section came to my ward and presented me with a private insurance patient form to sign a waiver for my eligibility as a public patient for my accommodation. I was told I was in a semi-private ward and that I would be liable for the €80 a day charges if I didn't sign. As well as that, I was told my health provider would be charged €650 a day for semi-private accommodation. I was not fully recovered from the effects of my operation, but I signed reluctantly. The next morning, I was able to leave my ward briefly and discovered that indeed I was in a fully public ward. That's understandable because of bed availability. I don't have an issue with this. I must emphasise the medical care and treatment which I received was nothing short of excellent. The classification of public or private was irrelevant to me. However, if this billing is common practice by hospital administration to charge semi-private rates for public accommodation, I can only describe it as unfair. Private medical insurance is expensive, but practices such as this can only lead to hikes in premiums, so says our correspondent. That's an interesting question. And I would say if you do have an issue and you believe that you were treated wrongly at the hospital, I mean, you've got the health ombudsman that you could perhaps go to. There's an insurance ombudsman as well. Or you could raise the issue directly with your insurer and see if this is acceptable practice to them. I mean, certainly you could make those inquiries. Let's take a look at a few of your comments before we go to our final call on the show this morning. I sympathise, love and pray for the babies and parents of the Kerry baby saga, but it's in God's hands and God's justice and mercy will deal with it in his own time. Leave it with God now and let Joanne Hayes have peace. It would fit the authorities of this country better to stop the present-day killing of babies, disposing of their aborted remains in the bin or flushed down the toilets, which is happening here in the Irish Republic. What's the difference between then and now? Well, caller, you're entitled to your view, but I would have to say a baby who was born in this country was stabbed 28 times, had its neck broken and was left lying dead and alone on a beach. I do think that merits investigation. Another caller says the sad thing about this story is that a baby boy was murdered and how the people responsible allowed Joanne Hayes and her family to go through hell for years. It's a disturbing story. Was it a pact to cover up for somebody else? Ray the Garthy, I wish they could tie up the strings regarding missing Mary Boyle after 46 years as well. Another caller says the church had no connection with this case. The state handled it badly at the time. Fear of public opinion existed in most countries over 50 years ago, whether you lived here or in the UK. Another caller says, don't look what the guards and the state did in Donegal to the McBrearty and the Short family. And that's not all that long ago, so says a caller. Now, in our newspaper review earlier, we had a headline from the Derry News that said the SDLP were seeking redress for homeowners in Derry, Tyrone and Fermanagh affected by defective concrete blocks. Joined on the line by Councillor Daniel McCrossan. Daniel, a very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Daniel, we know that Derry City and Strabane District Council began a process a number of months ago of getting information together and just finding out how many properties are involved, how many people are involved. But the council made it clear in doing that that it couldn't take it any further, that there was nothing in effect Derry City and Strabane District Council can do. We know we do not have, for political reasons, a functioning executive and assembly at the moment. So where does this issue have to go for actual decisions?
There's a number of issues here. So first of all, we need to acknowledge that right across these border constituencies, it is highly likely that a number of homeowners is going to be affected by the defective block scandal that is ongoing in the south of the border. I'm aware of a property in Derry that has already been confirmed and identified. We are aware of one in Castledeirg here, just in my own constituency, and I'm sure there are many more. The issue is how we encourage people to come forward if they believe that their property has been affected in any such way. To date, there is very little in place, in fact, nothing, that would help or assist those that are in that very difficult, stressful situation. We're talking about people's homes. We've seen the impact that it's had right across Donegal and how it has destroyed people's lives. And certainly I do have a concern that there are a number of properties right across these relevant constituencies that I've just mentioned that are undoubtedly affected by defective blocks and have not yet been identified. I do welcome the leadership by Derry and Strabane District Council that have brought about a scheme to register if you believe that your property or your home is affected by these defective blocks, but that in itself is nowhere near enough for a very simple reason. Someone coming forward and registering that their property is affected in such a very difficult way, but yet there's no support or help or assistance or redress at all being discussed, let alone being in place here in the north of Ireland, is an extremely difficult situation. The SDLP, my colleagues Justin McNulty and Mark Durkin and I, and indeed Colm Easter as the party leader, have raised continually in the last number of years our concerns that we do believe and highly would expect that there's properties in our constituencies that will be affected by this. And certainly at that time, Ministers Conor Murphy as the Minister for Finance and the Executive, Ministers Deirdre Hargey as the Minister for Communities, the two respective departments that would be responsible for such a scheme, said that there had not been any indication that there's any properties affected. But at the same time, there was no outreach from those departments to these communities, particularly in border regions, to find out if in fact there is properties in affected. And walking around various places, and particularly along the border, you can see that it is likely in some aspects the properties are affected.
Now, as we said, Derry City and Strabane have made it quite clear that they're going to provide information, but they have also made it equally clear that they can have no role in any form of redress. So it then begs the question, where does it go from here? I mean, as you mentioned, Colm Eastwood, the MP for Foyle, obviously, is he having conversations in Westminster, and is this registering in any way over there? And then the next question is obviously going to be, will there be a cross-border dimension to any resolution of this?
We have written to previous ministers that were in place in the executive, as I said, Minister Conor Murphy and Deirdre Hargey of Sinn Féin when they were in office. And certainly nothing, unfortunately, has been done, because at that stage there was no early indications of any properties that were affected. It would be very unusual, strange in fact, that given how our communities operate, that there is no properties affected in the north by these defective blocks, given that on a daily basis we organically and naturally cross the border on both sides of the island to live and to do very practical, normal, everyday things. The reality is that it wasn't, the scheme was that when blocks were being sold in the south to the north, it wasn't properly being policed, and for that reason I would highly expect that there are properties affected here. In the interim, in the absence of an executive, in the absence of leadership at this place, which unfortunately is where we seem to find ourselves continually, it is very difficult to establish how we're going to resolve this issue. But the SDLP has written to the permanent secretaries for the Department of Communities and Department of Finance and the head of the Civil Service, and we've also been writing to the Secretary of State to alert his attention to this potentially very difficult situation that is very fast coming on the tracks. There's people out there that won't even know their homes are affected as of yet, but the signs can be obvious, and we would ask people to identify or to familiarise themselves with those potential signs of these defective blocks and to reach out and come forward. The problem we have in trying to ensure that that happens is that there is an absence of any form of redress for those that will be in that situation. That is a great concern to me. We're talking about people's homes, people's livelihoods. People have saved and worked all their lives to build these properties, and unfortunately will be in a situation which will be very stressful. People will know that their homes are affected, but will be afraid to come forward because there isn't any support in place at the minute to assist those people in what will be a very difficult situation. And that is certainly something I will be raising as an MLA for this constituency, along with others who represent border constituencies and regions here across the north.
And this is the start of what's going to be a lengthy and sadly enduring conversation for many people. For now, Daniel McCrossan, MLA, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. We will, of course, be returning to this, and it will be returned to, I'm sure, again and again in the coming months. But for now, Daniel McCrossan, thank you very much indeed. And that is the 9 to Noon Show for this Monday morning. I'm back on the show again tomorrow morning at 9. Thank you to Anya for all her help. Thank you for Caroline, who produced and, as always, kept me right all the way through the programme. Most importantly, thank you to our contributors, and thank you to you for listening. John Breslin is up next around the Northwest. But for myself, Donald Kavanagh, have a very good day.